Dr. Brian Halverson is one of the UK's leading holistic dentists. He is the author of Great Teeth for Life and lectures widely to the public and to health practitioners. Brian is passionate about providing preventative information to guide us through all the stages of our lifetime. To find out more about Brian, go to www.brianhalverson.com. And now here is Dr. Brian Halverson.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Hi, Brian here, the integrated dentist. On UKHealthRadio.com. Today's show is all about preventing tooth decay from before birth to old age. I'd like to think that if you could take up some of the information, then this will be life-changing, not only to your good selves, but also to your whole family, especially the younger generation. Tooth decay is, in my mind, completely preventable. Why do I say this? Well, if we look back in history, before we started refining foods, and in fact, believe it or not, cooking, tooth decay was non-existent. Now, can we go back to those days? No, we can't. So we have to look at ways of developing lifestyle and habits, especially nutritional habits, to actually modify so that we can prevent as much as we can what I will call an avoidable disease. Besides costing the country literally billions, I'm more concerned as well about the individual pain and suffering that people have to go through. And a little bit like the dedication of my book, Great Teeth for Life, dedicated to those who suffer through lack of knowledge. And what I hope to provide is some basic knowledge which you can take away from this and spread the word that tooth decay is preventable. Now, when I say before birth, I remember on my first book, I looked at some research about some mice that were pregnant. Now, these mice were under laboratory conditions and they were genetically exactly the same as each other. So that all the variables were taken out of it, except for the fact that they were given different diets during their pregnancy. So one group of mice were fed on unrefined grains and foods, and the other group were fed on sugars and refined carbohydrates. The offspring were then actually brought to fruition and were given a diet of a fairly sugary diet, which in fact you could argue was given to both groups. Now, obviously, the offspring were marked, and what it was shown that those whose mother had been fed on sugars also were the ones that developed a much, much, much higher percentage of tooth decay. At the time, I thought, well, you know, how can you transmit the diet of the mother through to the, call it the almost the genetics of the offspring. Now we know through the fact that if during pregnancy the wrong sort of information is given to the child or the fetus by means of either emotional or nutritional, that this has a lifelong effect on the offspring. So prevention during pregnancy is so important. And this applies equally to tooth decay. So my advice would be that when we are in the state of looking at conception of children and during pregnancy, that diet is very important especially from the point of view of having high refined foods and sugars. Now, because of the energy requirements of wanting to produce a baby, this can often be difficult to do. But if you are pregnant or you have daughters pregnant or whatever, if the information being is that not only do you want to prevent tooth decay in your own teeth, but also in the offspring. Now, often this is where we have the integrated approach, where we could be looking at all sorts of practitioners, midwives, giving this information out so that in fact it's reinforced. So instead of just saying, look at, I'm pregnant, therefore to protect my baby, I'm not going to smoke and drink. Also look at not having too much in the way of refined carbohydrates and sugars. By preventing our unborn children from getting tooth decay, we hopefully will be able to avoid the terrible statistics which show that virtually in all parts of the UK, more than 40% of our children under 6 years old have got some form of tooth decay. Do we regard this as just being a UK-based problem? Not at all. The same is in the USA as in Australia. So a Western dietary epidemic which is affecting our poor young children, and most of the symptoms are that of pain and distress, and leading to places like Manchester Infirmary using up over 50% of their general anaesthetic time, taking out multiple teeth extractions from four poor children who haven't even had a chance to actually look at any form of prevention that might come from advice from the dentist or the hygienist. So we can do our best by making sure that our children get off to a start literally before they are born. If our expectant mums, besides cutting out as much of the refined carbohydrates and sugars during pregnancy as possible, also remember that if they have a good diet, and that diet, if they have enough of the as much best quality food, possibly organics, plenty of vegetables, the right types of fat, all the things that we know are good for us. We are also not only investing in the health of the mother, but also of the unborn child, so that in effect, the investment, even if it costs a little bit more money to buy these slightly more, what I'll call better quality foods, is worthwhile because you are also then helping the next generation. And if we're looking at the levels of unfortunate birth problems we have, statistically, we are seeing children with all sorts of illnesses which are preventable. Now, this is not putting any blame on the mother, but often through, in effect, not having the right education. So again, it's about really, really looking at the situation from the point of view of the next generation we are responsible for. When baby's born, I've always advocated that if we can, it's much better that breast is best. But if it's not possible, then these days there are some very good substitutes. And so really, it isn't just about giving sort of nutrition, but just checking that that nutrition has got all the basic elements. Also, breastfeeding does tend to cause a natural jaw development, but these days, teats can be made, artificial teats can be made, which in fact also preserve and mimic the development of the jaw. These days, I'd say, when you're looking at the midwives and all the advice they give, it is very, very much more advanced. So I really would say leave that area to, in effect, the experts in that particular growth and development of our very young children. Now, when we get to the transition from liquids into solids, today we have got much, much more variety in terms of products that you can buy in any supermarket, which may be organically grown or sourced, good products which are often just the right amounts of things such as what I'll call natural sugars, salt and everything else, perfectly for the baby's balance. So really the only issue here is potential extra expense. And I would argue that for any mum and dad, it's worth the investment in these first few years. A lot of people do know, but I'll just reiterate, that if you're looking at brain cells and the neuron growth, that after about 9 months, that the brain actually is developing something like, would you believe, 3 billion cells per day. Now, those have to have some form of nutrition. So if the baby is given, or the young, very young delinquent child, I'd say, not delinquent, whoops, that's a slip, that, and also by making sure that the brain cells, as they're growing, are fed with the right nutrition, it will prevent things such as delinquency in as they get older. So again, a great time to invest in the nutrition. And, you know, as I'm sure a lot of my colleagues, such as psychiatrists, will say that if the home life is harmonious, everything else, this all goes to hopefully producing a new generation. Now, there will come a time when our children will be faced with having to be in a less controlled environment. Now, this may well be when they start to go to nursery, or even to school. Now here, even if, you know, as parents, you've been very protective of exposing your children to sugars, they will be faced with given sweets as treats and sugary products. And as we all know, when somebody has a taste for sugar, it stirs up all the primitive instincts that sugar is good for us. We would use it as a storage mechanism from Stone Age man. And also that once you start being regularly exposed to sugar, it is highly addictive. So in a pragmatic world, we cannot say that, you know, you can avoid sugars completely. And this is where I will keep reiterating this fact, that often if we are exposed to sugars, it's often not so much the quantity of sugar, but the frequency that the sugar is taken in. Now, giving you a sort of a crude example, if we take a packet of Polo mints and we were to chew them all up in one go and eat them and swallow them. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, it would be a disaster for our likelihood of developing all sorts of sugar rushes, diabetes and so on. But when we talk about preventing tooth decay, it's about the time exposure that the teeth and the mouth actually have sugars in them. So if you had the self-same packet and you then actually were to just slowly suck them all day long, the quantity of sugar exposed onto the tooth surface may be much less, but the time exposure would be massive. And this would give rise to much, much more likelihood of getting tooth decay. Now, it doesn't apply just to things like slow sucking sweets. It could be the classic thing of, say, sipping a drink that contains sugars. It also slightly applies to drinks that are carbonated, which you then find contains acids. And as we get older in terms of teenagers and so on, you often find that children will drink, say, fizzy water or fizzy drinks. So not only have you got the terrible introduction of sugar, but also acids, which actually will not only accelerate the likelihood of getting tooth decay, but also will be dissolving away the tooth surface. And again, it's not about the quantity of, say, a fizzy drink, it's the time exposure where, in terms of more technical terminology, the pH of the mouth is lowered, and that lowering of the pH will cause the teeth to get what we call acid erosion, which can then lead to sensitive teeth and the enamel getting thinner. But also it's causing that lowering of the pH, which, and tooth decay is generally regarded as an acid reaction. So you're looking at a double whammy when you're having things like fizzy drinks. Now, when we're looking at our children, I would argue that until the child is about 10 years old, that parents have to take full, and I mean full, responsibility for the dental health of their child. Now, this is because, A, you can influence their diet, and also, of course, influence their oral hygiene, meaning that cleaning of their teeth with, say, toothbrushing. Now, can we really expect a 4 or 5 year old or 6 year old or even a 7 year old to really know how to clean their teeth? Not because they can't do it, but can they do it correctly? And so really, it's the parents' duty to actually ensure that this is carried out on a regular basis. Now, if we're saying, is there a problem over the parents' understanding how to clean teeth? Possibly there is. So this is where we would be looking at encouraging parents to send their children to the dentist, say round about 2 years old or even earlier if mum and dad are going along, to bring child along so that we get a psychological familiarisation with the practice. The last thing any dentist wants to see is a child who is not brushing their teeth, is coming in with holes. So if we can start seeing children as young as, say, a year, 18 months, 2 years, then in fact, not only can we check that things are okay and we're developing a familiarization with the practice rather than building up a fear element because they're coming in because of distress, but also we're providing every time valuable information for mum and dad on how they can be looking after and contributing to preventing their children getting tooth decay by providing anything from the right style toothbrushes and advice on diet, nutrition as well. The question I'm always asked is, what about, say, things like mouthwashes? Well, I believe for young children, it's not really feasible. Should we be looking at fluoride mouthwashes? My personal advice, absolutely not, because of a child cannot be expected to retain spit out, and I'm really not saying that they should be using it anyhow. The big question often then arises is fluoride toothpaste. Well, here we look at what I'll call risk benefit. In theory, if we could say our child was not going to be exposed to any sugars, then frankly, fluoride becomes redundant. But if we have got a risk of our child or children being exposed to sugars and also things such as acidic drinks, then in fact, my advice is, again, supervised cleaning with very small amounts of toothpaste. And yes, I would say as a risk benefit, the balance is between the benefit is of using fluoride toothpaste, because it's not as if like fluoride is a means of a core sort of solution, but it is a shown scientific route to prevention. But as I say, it's where we have children who we cannot guarantee would not develop some tooth decay due to, in fact, things such as sugars, and also being in an environment where possibly, you know, they may have all sorts of medical conditions which could lead to them not having such well-formed teeth. It could mean that they've got problems with their salivary flow. So there are situations where you cannot categorically say that no matter how altruistic you want to be, that you should not use fluoride toothpaste. So I think we have to take a pragmatic view on this side of things. And hopefully by our children going regularly to the dentist and to see the hygienist, that very valuable advice is given, which will mean that not only is there a familiarisation with the process of having their teeth cleaned at home mainly, and we do find that we all develop conditioned reflexes. So if mum, dad at a very young age can persist in gently cleaning the baby's teeth, the child's teeth, then in fact, you know, they have this conditioned reflex, which is the fact that they see a toothbrush come out and they open their mouth. You know, and yeah, it's a reflex, but it's a good reflex from the point of view that they are benefiting long term their survival and problems with their teeth. The other thing with, in fact, this type of education, it means that it's proactive, so things are gradually improving. And especially when children get to about the age of six, where new teeth start to appear in the mouth, this is where the permanent teeth can be very, very vulnerable to new holes. So at this stage, you know, as an absolute maximum age that children should be going along to see the dentist to look at growth and development and checking for what potentially could be disasters. And I do sincerely believe that if we look at the global surveys of where there are tooth decay in children under six, it has been in mainly the USA, UK, Australia, in the lower socioeconomic groups. It still, to me, is no excuse why we cannot get parents who will actually take their children to the dentist, even if they don't go themselves. I still see parents who bring children in who unfortunately may have a cavity. And often, especially if they're 8 or 9 years old, they say, yes, little Johnny has far too many sweets and he doesn't brush his teeth. Well, I have to be honest, I do round on the parents, because in effect, it is their responsibility. They have to create the environment where, you know, the teeth are clean by one means or another. Also looking at getting the right diet as much as they can interfere with it. And if necessary, getting the advice. Because, for example, if you have a permanent molar tooth, call it the first molar, number six, which erupts at about 6 years old, if that ends up having a early cavity, which then needs a filling, then it's fairly likely that by the time they're about 50, that that tooth may have gone through several fillings, possibly refillings, and then bigger and bigger each time, possible breakages, possibly crowns, possibly root fillings, all the things that really negate what I will call positive dentistry. Not as if it may be necessary to do, but it all can be prevented if we can have that period of time for really what I'll call almost very proactive prevention. And this really is parents' responsibility. During the period of mixed dentition, so anything from really about 7 or 8 through to really, I suppose, 14 is where we have a combination of baby teeth and permanent teeth. Now, during this phase, I sincerely believe that advice from a dentist is essential to look at not only avoiding things such as tooth decay and the early intervention of things like gum disease, but also how the jaw is growing and getting advice on if, for example, we might need some orthodontic treatment or any other corrective therapies that can be given or at least planned for. So then we get to the point where we have our next generation that become more independent. And this is where I think that if we can create a, call it a conditioning, where in fact our, call it teenager, has been given a environment where they appreciate the benefits of good nutrition, that they have been told and realizes the imminent dangers of things such as refined carbohydrates and sugars. I actually do lecture at schools in the 11 to 14 age group, and it is quite amazing how well the children have been educated about, you know, the avoidance of things such as sugars and tooth decay. And often when I've looked at their teeth, there are remarkable number that haven't had any fillings at all. Now, they're not, diet is perfect. So we're not talking about a perfection in their diet. But if you can just, or the child that becomes, or the teenager becomes much, much more aware of where the risk factors are, and they've got into a good habit themselves of coming to the dentist, being shown how to clean their teeth effectively, then this really is, again, a lifetime investment. And just like when we look at treating gum disease and looking at the techniques are used to avoid gum disease, tooth decay is exactly the same. Tooth decay, I believe, is a young person's disease. Are there any variations on that? Yes, there are, because often when we get to the more senior group, then we're looking at possibly the effects of the increasing number of people with certainly type 2 diabetes. Not only does it reduce your immune system, but also there's often a chemical need for refined carbohydrates and sugars. So often you will find certainly the elderly who might be constantly snacking, and again, this is prolonged frequency of sugars on the teeth, so that in effect they may have got to 65, 70 with hardly any cavities, and then suddenly, because of this snacking on sugars, they're suddenly getting tooth decay on the roots of their teeth. So, you know, there's always a risk right the way through. And again, by regular attendance, we've got a great opportunity to explain these various stages in prevention of tooth decay. Now, I mean, obviously there's always genetic variations from the point of view of the type of saliva, the bacteria that live in the mouth, and these can change the sort of the rate that and risk that people are at tooth decay. But it's not as if these are not relevant factors, but if in fact these things are constantly monitored, looked at, it is amazing how many people can virtually, especially in the new generation, can get through their whole life without a single cavity. You know, when I was, say, 20, this would have been completely unheard of. But just like, in fact, we were looking at loss of teeth in the over 65s and in sort of the mid 80s, this would be 60% of the population would have no natural teeth at 65. Nowadays, we're seeing a much, much higher proportion, not only with their teeth, but also in relatively good condition. Yes, they may have fillings, they may have crowns, but they still have their teeth functioning and are benefiting from having a mouth where they are using their what nature gave them. So in effect, you know, it is a testimony to prevention. The main way that we can actually prevent tooth decay, in my opinion, is through good nutrition and mainly the avoidance of refined sugars. We do have to watch out not just for the obvious sugar, but the hidden sugars. And we all now know that, for example, things like the basic common tomato sauce, ketchups, curries, bread, all contain some sugar. It's absolute madness, but there we are. And we just have to realize that these are hidden sugars and may not even taste sweet, but they're there. The other thing as well, of course, is that we can't say that even our seemingly healthy foods, such as fresh fruit, also has got sugars, mainly in the form of things like fructose. But if we take the various sugars, like, for example, white sugar, maybe sucrose, we could be looking at fruit sugars, fructose. These are generalizations. And also, in fact, things such as milk, which contains lactose, which again is a sugar. And they all, frankly, will have a detrimental effect on our teeth. Many of the integrated medical doctors and nutritionists and naturopaths will tell you that it also has effect on our microbiome, which can, is it, of course, starts in the mouth and also then goes to our stomachs and produces all sorts of things such as dysbiosis, blood inflammation. But for this particular presentation, we're looking at tooth decay in the mouth. So although we can look at the, what should we say, the scientific reactions, what we're really looking at is some form of practical and pragmatic way of dealing with these sugars that we really find it very difficult to diminish altogether. And that really doesn't matter if you are a so-called two meat and veg man, to a vegan, to a vegetarian or a paleo. We still have to look at the sugars that become in the diet. The main thing always to remember, of course, is that it's the frequency of the sugars. So that's where really we need to be diligent. So for example, if we stick to what a lot of the, again, integrated doctors talk about, which is often intermittent fasting, where we will have big spaces between our meals, again, it's cutting down on the frequency. And sometimes if you're having sugars that are combined with things such as the other things that we'd have in our diet, our vegetables, proteins, and healthy fats, then of course, you know, it can mitigate the amount of sugar and time exposure on our teeth. So again, I will keep reiterating about the frequency, which means that really, especially for our younger generation, they've really got to have some good meals that will sustain them during the high energy output, which can be both mental as well as physical. So again, really, snacking is out. And if you say, well, what about snacks that haven't got any basically obvious sugars in? They're normally of poor quality. But if you said to me, yes, what about snacking on some, you know, fresh nuts then that sort of thing, and sunflower seeds or what have you, yes, absolutely fine. But I think it still would be my basic advice from a nutritional point of view is to keep to meals and not have lots of intermediaries. And there's various other reasons for that. But from the point of view of tooth decay, it will just get us into some good habits, especially for the younger generation. So there we have it. You know, a very simplistic, but hopefully a plan that most of us can adopt to, like most things in life, if we improve by a certain amount, i.e. cut out various sugars from where we see it, we can often see a disproportionate improvement, not only in the rate of tooth decay, but also in the rate of how we generally feel, because we do know that sugars, as we've discussed in previous programs, has got all sorts of detrimental effect, right from obesity to heart disease, cancer. So what we're looking at here is that the integrated approach is that tooth decay is manifesting in the mouth, showing that the body is in a dis-ease state. So that the tooth decay is really a manifestation of what's going on in the body. So, you know, please, with our children, do not divorce the fact that tooth decay is separate from what's going on. I know this sounds a little bit drastic, but the fact is that if we can follow some of this advice, I think that we can certainly look, and I do focus on the younger generation, because I think there we can have the lifetime habits which will hopefully bring the lack of pain, disease, cost of dental treatment, which is avoidable, out of the equation when it comes to our next generation. We've got so much environmental pollution, all sorts of nutritional problems, GM, so on and so forth. We could really do without having another burden for our next generation to cope with, including ourselves, of course, you know, because, you know, we could be looking at somebody 60 years old and another 30 years. And therefore, you know, we're not looking at a time limit on it, but often, hopefully, by the time we're into our sort of 20s, we've developed habits. And hopefully these are good habits, you know, habits on nutrition, habits on lifestyle, habits on simply even the mechanical process of cleaning our teeth efficiently. And I've always say to my patients, you know, it's not about how long you spend on your teeth, it's how efficient you are. So if you are, for example, a brain surgeon and you are washing your hands, sterilizing them before an operation, you don't spend half an hour doing it. You may spend a few minutes doing it, but you're doing it efficiently. And that is the same with toothbrushing. And in my mind, it's worthwhile investing in some time, especially with a hygienist, saying, look, my mouth is different from somebody else's mouth. Can you please show me in detail how I can brush my teeth effectively? Then review that, say in 3 months or 6 months time, and say, how is it now that I've adopted these techniques? And slowly you evolve a habit of cleaning your teeth, which is efficient for your own dentition. On that note, we are all individuals, and I hope this will give us some form of information, and I thank you again for listening to me and hopefully taking some of the advice I've given to heart. Thank you. If I said to you that by eating too much sugar too frequently, that there was an absolute risk of your arms and legs falling off or your genitals shrinking, you would most likely take the risk of having too much sugar very, very seriously. So, as a thought, Think of that when you're also trying to prevent disease, not only in your mouth, but also in the whole of your body. Thank you for listening.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all